Blog Talk Radio.
As I can possibly get about my guests, and you all know that. But I think this week I have outdone myself. Check this out. Legend, pioneer, innovator, musician, supreme, sexy, co-founding member of one of the funkiest bands of all time. Now, if those aren't enough nouns for you, then I'll just go ahead and introduce Mr. Jerry Martini. Welcome, Jerry.
Hey, right. That was a nice build-up,
isn't it? That was good, huh? I'm getting better.
Really
I'm getting. Did you hear that sexy part? Did you hear that
sexy part?
Part,
baby. Not because I'm old now, you know.
No, you're not old. You are still out there throwing down. So thank you so much for joining me tonight. I know you have a very busy schedule, and I appreciate you taking time out to chat with me and my listeners on Everybody Is a Star. Does that sound familiar?
It sure does. And besides, you know, how could you not do that with you? Because you're family. You've always been family to us, all of us. You know?
Absolutely.
We love you. We love your voice. Love your voice. We love everything about you, Patrice.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I would hope that after I've been around this long that somebody would consider me family. So thank you. I sure do appreciate that. So, listen.
Well, I know Cynthia does, too, and I do, and I can't speak for anybody else, but Cynthia's been my partner for 47 years, and we
Ooh, that's a long time for you, for two people. You guys must really like each other. 47 years, that's a long time.
That even includes the 3 years we was on the road with the Prince.
Uh-oh, okay, all right. We'll see, I want to be just like you guys when I grow up because that means something right there. That is real. 50 years, that is real. Okay, Jerry, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to start from the beginning, okay? So. Okay, so let's start from where your hometown is.
Okay, San Francisco, where I grew up.
Okay. So you grew up in San Francisco. What school did you go to?
I went to Farragut Grammar School, James Denman Junior High, Pablo High School, San Francisco City College, and then I dropped out to just play music full-time. My mom wanted me to be a music teacher. I said, well, maybe later on, but right now I just want to go play.
Okay, so you kind of met her halfway. So, you know, we have to shout out these schools and stuff because people that are listening from San Francisco, you know, they want me to shout out, okay, what school did he go to? So now when you were in school, of course, they still have music programs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so now, what was your first instrument, or did you sing first, or how did it go? How did you get, what was your first musical influence?
Well, it starts actually in junior high, and I just wanted to play saxophone, but back then, you couldn't do that. You had to do a year or two of clarinet first before they let you play saxophone in the band, and so I just went right through the channels, my clarinet, which I'm glad I did, because I got to play my clarinet on Dance and Music, you know, on a little hook.
Oh, okay. So I wonder why that was. I wonder why you just couldn't play saxophone if you wanted to play saxophone.
Because that was the rules back in the 50s.
Okay, that was the rules. Okay.
Yeah, that's back then. Yeah, I graduated from high school in 1960. So I started in junior high, like in 55, and then 54, 55, and then started high school at 57. And
okay.
Back then, they did a certain way you did it, because back then, and still is, saxophone is not considered a legitimate instrument for orchestra and things like that. A clarinet is. So
okay.
The saxophone wasn't, it was popular, but not the way it is now. You know, people go in now and say, I'm going to play saxophone, that's the end of it. But you couldn't do that.
Right.
Just like in 1958, I joined the Musicians Union. You couldn't just go join back then. You had to take a test. They put you in a room with some guy with no neck, and he tried to embarrass you. You know, and read this, you gotta read that. And I'm like 16 years old, I'm not scared. So I did it, and then they, of course, all they're going to do is take money anyway, but they made you sweat it. And back then, when you played a gig in San Francisco, the union was strong then. These same guys with no neck would show up and say, I'm going to see a union court. And then they would cause you trouble if they didn't. And they would get physically threatening back then,
Wow. Okay. So you had to go through a lot just to be a musician. Well, tell me this.
Yeah.
What kind of musical influences were going on in your home? Like, what'd your mom and dad listen to? What'd you grow up listening to?
I never really heard them listen to too much music and stuff. You know, I was pretty much the musician of the family. My oldest brother played the accordion. I had to play that too. That was my first instrument.
Okay.
And you were Italian. You played the accordion back then. And you used to go, the relatives came over, you had to play old solo mayo and all that stuff,
Right.
So I thought it was pretty cool. And then when I started going to school and listening to all my favorite people, then I really, really got into saxophone. Gene Ammons, Sonny Stitt, and Junior Walker, and King Curtis. And a couple of white guys too I liked, but pretty much I was kind of an outcast in my class because being Caucasian, I wasn't digging on the music that was going on. I was digging on James Brown and Little Richard, all the saxophone players in these bands, they killed it. You know, and then in the jazz, so that's what I liked. And my mama liked it too. And she said, you play what makes you feel good, son. So that's all I got doing what I'm doing.
Okay, how did you get turned on to, James Brown and all these people? It was just through
on the radio. That's all we had back then was radio. I mean, I grew up in my early years when that's all we had was the radio. We didn't have TV until 1950. They didn't have a refrigerator. We were
okay. So what was the name of that radio station? Do you remember?
No, I was just dialing until I heard it. But I know it was the soul station. I'm not even sure. I know KDIA hadn't started yet. So a lot of it, I would just go to the music stores. And I would get 45s and albums of guys that I had heard. They had jazz playing on the air back then. You just had to just dial. I did full on. It's been like 55 years or so or more. You just let your fingers, like going through the yellow pages,
Okay. So now your mama wanted you to be a music teacher, but you did not want to do that. So how did you venture out into the music world? How did you become a musician?
Well, I joined in high school, in junior high, I played in every musical program that was available. I played in the band. I played in the orchestra. I played in the school dance band, and I even played in the marching band. And I play out at Old Kezar Stadium in San Francisco, and all my peers would see me in that uniform and make fun of you, you know? Say,
right.
Look at Mark. Look at Mark Keating, man. What a nerd. These same people, 25 years later, 20 years later, were kind of, hey, could I have your autograph, man?
Right.
Sure, man. I don't hold a grudge. Yeah,
well,
but
you
that's
know,
just how it is. You got to follow your heart, you know?
Right, right. So when did you do your first, get into your first band? What was the first band you played in?
Well, let me see. It was called Tony and the Chokers was one band. We just played locally and played for little street fairs and stuff. Now, when I was about 17, I started playing down on Broadway, and I played down in the Tenderloin in San Francisco when I was 17.
Uh-huh.
Had a little fake ID. I mean, the guys would say, you look so young, you've got to be 21. That's ridiculous. I had Coffee Dons down in the Tenderloin. I played with some good jazz musicians like Frank Jones, a great piano player. And a bunch of guys, I started playing with Sly when I was 17.
Okay, so first it was Tony Jones and the what now?
No, Tony and the Jokers.
And the Jokers, okay, Tony and the Jokers.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys are playing locally. Okay, so you did that around town. We've all done that, playing locally around town. So how did you meet Sly? You were in his band, right?
Well, I met Sly just around San Francisco because it's back in those days, American Bandstand was really big with Dick Clark. In San Francisco, we had a show, a spinoff, a kind of show called Dick Stewart's Dance Party. And Sly was on that as a regular, you know, and he was one of the guys that out there dancing and stuff, and he was already getting into it, you know. We played in a band called Joe Piazza and the Continentals, and we worked around town, and Sly had Biscayne, and Joe Piazza and the Continentals was the backup band for Sly's first record, you know, when his first single with that was called Yellow Moon, and the flip side, because they had 45s, was called Uncle Sam Beachy Boy. That was the name of it. Sly sang lead on both, and so we messed around with that for a while and played locally. And then when I started working down on Broadway with George and Teddy and the Condors at the Condor. And Sly was working all over Broadway, too. We just started hanging out. And then he wrote The Swim when he was 19 for Bobby Freeman.
Yeah, I remember that song. That was a good song.
Yeah, I did the whole album with him. I was in the studio band with that, yeah. Sly, man, we just got talking. He was just so brilliant. I mean, he was such a good writer, but I quit writing for about 20 years. He was so good. I said, oh, Lord, look at that. It changed him. You know, and his words were like visionary. You know, it's amazing that most of your genius is from forever back, you know. Can't really even live up your own genius, you know, your own lyrics. Because Sly, he had it down on paper, how to get through life, and how to do it right, and how to color me true. And, you know, do you take credit for somebody else cooking?
You know what? I love, that was one thing about the group that I love, the lyrics. I listen to the lyrics, and you're right. You know, even today, you know, in these days and times, his lyrics are still so relevant until, you know, it's just classic. It's timeless, but timeless. But you know what I think is funny? You said, now this is something I've never heard before. This is new to me. You said that he was on a dance show.
Yeah.
He used to dance weekly on a dance show?
Yeah, He was a regular on Dick Stewart's dance party. That's where he met Joe Piazza, who was the band leader of one of the first bands that we played in, you know, just a top 40 band, you know. And Sly, back then, he was playing bass and guitar. I mean, he didn't know how to play keyboards, but that's how he ended up on the keyboards because of course, you know, Larry came into the picture, so he decided not to play bass, and so he said, well, Freddie's on guitar, so I'll play keyboards. Because up until then, we were going to have a keyboard player, a guy, I'm little, this guy came up to my chant, you know, he was, his name was Henry the Chicken Hawk. That's his name. He's a little funky little white boy that played the heck out of the B3 organ. So we were going to have him. We loved him. And so we said, okay, well, I'll play keyboard. And since Sly spent a lot of time with Billy Preston, and Billy did an album with Sly, as you know, before Sly and Family Stone. And so he done a lot of learning from Billy Preston. He was a master of funk.
Yeah, Billy Preston.
Stinky, funky keyboard player.
Oh,
so
my
bad.
God. Oh, my God.
Him. You know?
So we all had
a musical brotherhood back then, you know? And
right.
It's great.
Right. Everybody was sharing. Nobody was competing like that. Everybody was just trying to make. Yeah, everybody was just trying to make everybody else. It was just all about making the best music you can make. Now,
absolutely.
I know.
But nobody could compete with Sly's lyrics anyway.
Right, right. Now,
He had about a 10-inch book. I went over his house when he was 19. And when he moved in, he got that house for his parents at 700 Urbana. And he opened up this book. I looked at it. That's when I said, I ain't writing well, man. If I can't come up with something at least, you know, kind of this good, I'm just going to wait. I'm going to learn before I put the pen out. Because he was so bad, I looked at him and I said, he was so bad. It made my knee shake. He was so bad.
Yeah, he was. I mean, you know, he's a poet for sure. Now, last week I had Tamale on as a guest. And so
that's my baby sister. I love
her.
Yep,
I know. So she found this this clip from when Sly was a DJ at Queso. And when we were listening, the clip was about 8 minutes long, and we were listening to it, and Sly was, even back then as a DJ, he was incorporating, like, the lyrics that he used later in his songs. Like, when he was, at one time he said, don't burn, baby, burn. You got to learn, baby, learn, before you become a burn, baby, burn. And then next thing you know, he put it in a song.
On the record.
It was two or three things he did like that ended up on a song. And so, you know, so he must have, he had ideas like way ahead of time. Now,
way.
I know way ahead
Tamale
of time.
Tamale was a baby then. Tamale,
I know.
She used to call up and dedicate. Hi, this is Tamale.
Right.
I want to dedicate and Willie Popcorn and all these people. And I would call up. I used to go down to KSO and to the station down there and hang out with him and bug him. And he flipped the seat around in a swivel chair, and he had an upright piano that was in tune. And he sounded, I said, man, I was working out the Tiger A-Go-Go out at the Hilton, man, that's no more, and out at the airport. It's not even a Hilton right there. And I said, man, why don't you sing your show? And I was joking around, you know. And so next thing I knew, he sang his whole show. He sang the news. He sang all the commercials. He sang everything. He did not say one talk sentence. He sang the entire show. And I've never heard that before. People who remember back then are still talking about it, just like I'm still talking about it.
Oh, man. Too bad nobody was recording that. Why didn't somebody record that? So, now, I know that Sly had his own band. He was the, what was he? He was the Stoners, right?
The what?
Sly had a band called the Stoners. Was he
the
Stoners?
Yeah, Sly and Stoners.
Stoners.
Right.
And then Freddie had a band, the Stone Souls, right?
Freddie and the Stone Souls.
Freddie and the Stone Souls. Okay. So tell me about, first of all, here's what I really want to know. What was it about that name Stone? Where did that come from? Because both of them used versions of Stone, and then the final group ended up being Sly and the Family Stone. So, and then Sly was calling himself Sly Stone. So where did that Stone thing all start?
It just came out of his mind. That name came up, okay, because Sylvester Stewart didn't have the ring that his first professional name was Sly Stone, you know, and he would memorize portions. It was this guy named Lord Buntley, and the guy says, "Hey, how you cats and kitties out there? I'm gonna lay a cat. I knew that the baddest, hippest, swingest man ever stepped upon this sweet swinging stair," and they called this guy Sly Stone. But what Sly did was he took that. But actually, Lord Buntley had it, and it was actually about Jesus. And they called this guy the Naz, which is Jesus of Nazareth. So
okay.
He took ideas that he heard and stuff, incorporated it into his thing, and people just loved it.
Okay.
He was so happy.
So once again, this was just something that he came up with in his genius mind.
Yep.
Okay, so now how did the members of the two groups emerge?
Well, really easy. It was a family affair, just like your show, you know. And Sly and I talked about putting a band together. I mean, Sly credits me with starting the band, but I think I would just did my part of making it happen.
Well, you definitely were a founding member of the band, and that's for sure.
Well, he's the one that says on a video that's circulating now on YouTube, on a TV show with James Darren, where he says, "Well, actually, Gary Martin started the band. He came to the radio station, blah, 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 blah." And I said, and Prince is the one that told him, Prince said, "I heard this thing, the Sly's crediting, he was starting the band." I said, "Nah, I was just there. I was right there. It's always about Sly. It wasn't about Jerry Martini. I'm the guy who used to go pick up. I used to drive to my Falcon station wagon and go pick up Cynthia in Oakland and go pick up Larry, and we'd go down to Losers North or Winchester Cathedral and go to work, you know." Back when we first started the band, it was Sly and the Family Stone. In the beginning, when we were choosing a name, the Family Stone was the first thing that came up. But then, because he was the driving force and the musical genius of the band. Although Freddie's a pretty close second, I'll tell you that. Freddie can write too.
And, yes, he can.
And he can sing. I mean, Freddie and I are so close today. You know, I love Freddie with all my heart. You know, and he's a really good pastor. And every time I go to his church, it makes me cry because I get up and play. And it's hard for me to play my heart, because I'm feeling it inside so much that affects your chin, you know what I mean, and your armature.
Right, right,
so, but,
right.
As soon as I relax, I get into it. I just love to play with Freddie. Love it.
Okay, so how did the two groups merge together?
Sly put it together. I said, "Freddie, let's take some guys from your band, take some guys from my band, and I'm building right now. We just put it together and build a band." So Freddie just bought Greg, so it was Greg and Freddie from the Freddie band, and then Sly had me, by the way, and Rose hadn't joined yet, because like Rose said it on the, when we did that interview for Sony about a month or so ago, she goes that it wasn't stable enough. I'm a safe person. I had a good job. I wasn't about to give it up. Something I wasn't sure was going to happen. So,
right.
And Rose would like that, and I actually really love that about her. She's real smart. Everybody in that family is really smart. And so Rose came along, you know, on a dance and music album. And we did the first album, as you know, with six people. And, of course, all of, like, Little Sister and the band, they were always the background singers, always.
Right.
Back in the day. So he had a lot of talent to draw on. So we did that first album. And we started rehearsing that at Big Mama's house. And
so that's what I was going to ask you. Okay, after all the pieces were put together, because like you said, the talent was like, I don't even see how all the talent could fit in one room, just the vibe of all the talent. So you guys got everybody together in one room. So do you remember what that first rehearsal was like?
Oh, absolutely. I remember that. It was in December, October, December 1966, at Big Mama's house, the Cat's house, Urbano Drive in San Francisco, down in the basement of the house. They had a music group. And we started practicing, and it was on. After that first practice, it was on. And then Sly, we got our gig down in San Jose and another place. Sly would come a little later sometime because he had his disc jockey thing, and he'd fly down there in his purple XKE.
Uh-huh.
You know, then join us, and Freddie would be the band leader in the intro. Freddie would run the show. And then Sly would get there, he would take over, and everything went down like clockwork. We got better and better and better. We rehearsed after the gig. We do our after-hours club, and we rehearsed until 6 in the morning.
Wow. See, that's the way you had to do it. That's the kind of work that you had to put in to be able to get the results that you guys got. Because this is what propelled you to the top. See, that's the problem today. You know, some of these young artists, I'm not saying all of them, but a vast majority of them don't understand the work that has to be put in to whatever it is that you're trying to do, you know. So, and you know, like, rehearsal is the key. It is the key. And I remember, you know, you do the gigs, and then after that you go do another gig. Sometimes you wouldn't get to bed till like 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, but you wouldn't be tired. You wouldn't be tired because you could go on again. If there was another gig, you could drive straight to that one and go to that one too. So
that's what's good about being young, huh?
Yep, I heard that.
I couldn't do that now. I'm 71. I just turned 71 on Tuesday.
I know. I wish you a happy birthday. You're a Libra, me too. So, but you know,
baby.
That has all, to me, it has everything to do with the passion. You know what I'm saying? You got to have passion. So now, you mentioned Color Me True, which is one of the songs you submit as one of your favorite songs, and it's one of my favorite songs, too. So what album was Color Me True on?
I don't know.
I think it was the first one. I believe it was the first one. A Whole New Thing. Listen to me.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, somebody will definitely tell me.
Somebody will. Actually, though, I forget a lot of what was on what album and stuff because they all ran into each other with me, you know.
I don't have it yet, but you know what? It's all over Facebook. Everybody on Facebook has it, and they are glad about it. So right now, we are getting ready to listen to Color Me True. Here we go.
Thank you.
ways on so many of the songs, and Cynthia was telling me that the way that that came about was sometimes when they was in church and whatever, they were doing something, they forget the lyrics to something, so they would just go boom 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 boom. They would do that and to kill time and keep the funk on, you know, in church.
Okay, and it worked every
sense.
Time. Because you're right, he had all kind of variations of boom, 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 shaka, laka, laka, just all kind of versions, and I loved every single one of them. So, Jerry, we're taking calls from callers. Is it all right to speak to some of your fans?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so we have a call on the line, area code 301. Caller, are you there?
I sure am.
Hi there.
Hi. This is Ray from back.
Hi, Ray. This is Ray. Ray is a good friend of mine. Jerry, and don't you already know Jerry?
I sure do.
Hey,
Hi, Papa
Ray.
Jay.
How
are you?
I'm doing great, man. Still kicking. As Mella.
It's doing just
ain't
great.
Gonna
doing
stop.
Just
I'm going to bop until I drop, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've got a question for you, though. I remember seeing a picture of you a while back with the Beatles.
And I
wondered how that came about. And was that before, wasn't that before you were with Sly and the Family Stone?
Yes, it was. It was about a year before. And the band I was playing with, Doors and City and the Condors, our managers, Pete and Gino, at the Condor in San Francisco, sent us to Italy to make it, which they were about 20 years behind. It was kind of funny, but it was a good experience. We're playing at this club in Rome, and the Beatles walked in. This is when the Beatles were their biggest year, 1965. I just had a fit because I really didn't like it at first, and Sly said, listen to it a little closer. Sly and I were really tight, and he goes, the Beatles are doing stuff nobody else is doing. He goes, they're going to be really big. And he was sure right. And we started the band, Rod, about a year after this. And so they went outside and in front of the club, this gate, and they took their picture with us. And I think that was really nice. They're real nice guys.
That was phenomenal.
On YouTube. You see everything on YouTube.
I missed that. Somehow I missed that one. I missed the picture with the Beatles. But, Ray, you didn't miss it, though, huh? You saw it, huh?
I certainly did. I try to keep my eyes peeled for all things Sly and the Family Stone and all things Graham Central Station.
That's right. Absolutely. I think you might almost be a bigger Sly and the Phone, Sly, can't get it out, Sly and the Family Stone fan than I am. Almost, maybe. You are up there. It might be a tie, okay? So how have you been doing? You been doing fine?
I'm doing good.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, thank you. Was that all that you want to say to Jerry?
Yes, just I hope he had a great birthday, and hopefully see you down the road.
Absolutely. Had a great birthday. Yeah, I just stayed at home with my granddaughter and my wife, and we had a nice time. Then last night, I have local games that I play on here in my area up in Folsom, California, actually Caldwell Hills, and they gave me a birthday party last night.
Oh, great.
People, the majority of them, of course, were over 50, and that's fine with me because they're all loving what we're doing. So most of the young kids were next door at another establishment. It's like two places in one courtyard. You know? It's a great place to get your chops up.
I heard that. Well, yay, that's wonderful. I wish I was there. Nobody told me it was a party. Maybe I'll catch you next year, Jerry. So,
all right, if I'm going to be at the same place.
So, Ray,
I've been playing there 2 years now.
Have you? Okay, well, next year I'll be there. I want to thank you very much, Ray, for your call. We appreciate it, and may the funk be with you, my brother.
Thank you. You have a nice night.
Hey, Ray.
Okay.
Good to talk to you, man.
All right, same here, Pop.
Okay, buddy.
Okay. Now we have another call, Jerry, from area code 909. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's your name?
This is Zelda.
Oh, hey, Zelda. What's going on? Jerry, this is Zelda. Have you met Jerry?
I met Jerry last year. As a matter of fact, I picked him up from the Long Beach airport.
All right.
Okay.
How you doing? Zelda, yes.
You remember Zelda?
Because when we did the thing at
the Long Beach Funk Fest?
Yeah, right, going at the Funk Festival.
Okay.
And you were driving, I remember.
Yes.
Is it?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm still kicking.
Yeah.
Isn't Zelda sweet, Jerry?
I'm going to tell you something about Zelda. Wherever the funk is, that's where she is. I don't care where it is. New York, Chicago, Texas, wherever it is, that sister is there. So, you know, she's like the last of a dying breed, so we have to give her props.
Absolutely. How's Bobby doing down there? How's Bobby, that just those concerts?
I'm sorry?
Bobby.
He said, how's Bobby Easton doing?
Oh, Bobby's doing great. We had the Funk Fest again last year, and hopefully we'll do it again next year.
Yeah, I'd like to get the Family Stone to do it one more time.
Oh, so would I.
Me too.
I vote for that. I'll put a bug in his ear.
I can't tell him because Cynthia and I did it with Don the first time, with Don Silva, and
right.
We had fun. We did it with the Brides.
Right.
It's all a musical family, you know. We all
exactly.
play a lot of the same songs.
Exactly.
Maybe in different keys, but it still comes out the same.
Okay, and that's what it's all about. Well, Zelda, my sister, captain of Team Chocolate, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate
thank
you.
You. No problem. I just have to holler at you.
What a nice surprise, Zelda.
Okay.
Happy birthday, Jerry.
Thank you, dear.
Okay, sweetie.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so, Jerry, let me see. Here's what I wanted to ask you now. Where did we leave off? Oh, right here. Here's what I wanted to ask you. Now, what did it feel like when you realized that you guys have made it, that Sly and the Family Stone have made it, had actually made it. When did you know?
When I was able to make my car payment. That was a good indication. And when every time I turned the radio on, I heard boom, 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 boom. That's the dance of the music hit. Because the first
right.
album was no big hit. It was to us. We were a legend in our own minds.
I heard that. I heard that.
We loved it, and a small circle of friends and musicians loved it, and people that heard it, that had open musical minds, loved it. But the
and
people who wanted to hear the same thing was, I loved Motown, and I loved all the other stuff that was happening, but it was, ours was different, and that's what I loved about it, and so did the people from Motown. They loved it, too.
They sure did, because they tried their best to try to emulate it. But, you know, Sly did something, you guys did something that had never been done before, until I heard a DJ call it funk, I had no idea what it was until he called it funk. I said, okay, well, if this is funk, then this is something that I must be a part of. Now, what particular gig do you remember you did that made you also feel like, okay, this is it, we have arrived? What gig was that?
Well, definitely the first time we played Madison Square Garden. That was a no-brainer there, when it's 28,000 people that are jumping up and down, and the police are dancing. I said, well, something's happening in here.
When the police are dancing. Now, I heard that the fire department and some people got kind of nervous. Was this the time that they got nervous because the building actually started shaking or something? And
yeah.
So what happened with that?
Nothing. We just kept playing, and we all lived. The building lived, and it all went fine. But people always have a tendency to get nervous, especially the people who are in charge of the event. So the people that are afraid that will jump in front of you and try to keep the people from having a good time. Now, there's always going to be that, because that's just the way the world is. It hasn't changed at all in 50 years. There's always going to be people that don't want everybody in front of you to be jumping up and down. Shut down. You know,
right.
You're going to get that somewhere.
Yeah, always. But is it true that, now I want to know if this is a rumor or not, is it true that the building actually started moving, and that the fire department and the officials and stuff got worried that something might happen to the building? Is that true?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that was Madison Square Garden did that, but that was pretty solid. But it was definitely at one of the gigs that we did. I don't remember all of them. I get things run into each other. I have some timers. I don't remember.
I heard that. Well, yeah, there's a story that at the Madison Square Garden, that when you guys were doing your last song, I think it was Higher, that when the people started, you know, the energy was flowing and the people were jumping up and down and partying and having a good time, that the building actually started, something started going on with the building that made the people, the fire department and stuff, think that the building was getting ready to collapse or do something. And, you know, that's pretty deep right there, when a big old place like the Madison Square Garden, you know, people can get nervous. You guys must have been tearing it up. But I remember. I know you weren't. And I remember how people used to act on Hire. I remember, because I would be standing right there behind the speakers wondering if the speakers were even going to be able to withstand, you know, all the energy, so much energy. So, okay, well, I was trying to get that rumor straight. So we that's still a mystery. I have to research
that
some
more. That was a fact. All that stuff happened. People are always worried something's going to happen. If people would just let things happen, we wouldn't have had a lot of the mess that was going on in those days, you know, where the police would get involved. At Madison Square Garden, though, what I remember was looking up and seeing the police dance. And I love that because I was so used to seeing the police pulling their sticks out, just hungry to be batting somebody upside the head, you know.
Right.
To make themselves feel more powerful, you know.
Okay. So now, also, there were instances almost of reverse discrimination almost when it came to you and Greg being in the group. There were times, different places where you would go where would get kind of physically assaulted a little bit, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you?
I got knocked upside the head. It wasn't
yeah.
Tied to anything. I almost got knocked out. They kicked my booty, you know, and Sly jumped right in there, and Sly was a young man then, and he was a good fighter. You know, he was mentally he was stronger than most people were physically, and he was like, he had my back, and he walked me out of a couple places, and we went down the fire escape at one place, and somebody came up behind me, hit me in the back of the head so hard, I was seeing stars and not the right kind of stars, you know.
Well, now, was this as you were walking into the venue when this happened?
We were walking through the people. It was one of those venues. It wasn't one of our bigger gigs. It was one of those gigs that was, I'd say, 99th and 9/10th and 9/10th African-American. And I was the .1111. And
right.
And Greg, they didn't bother Greg as much as me because he's Sicilian, you know, and he was a little darker than me. But I was just milky white with long hair and blue eyes. And, man, I might as well just put a target on me, you know.
Mm-hmm. But Sly made sure.
Oh, yeah, he took care of me. He looked out for me.
Yeah.
And that was
before
we had bodyguards and stuff. And afterwards,
right.
I mean, we had some pretty tough boys who were looking out for us, and I didn't really worry, you know. I'd worry more nowadays because everybody got so many assault weapons. And
I heard
that. Back in those days, they would just want to give you a good whooping, but they weren't like talking about shooting you or anything. You know, things have changed a lot in the last 40 years.
Well, basically, you guys basically were a family and looked out for one another as far as that goes, right?
Absolutely.
So then Cynthia, because Cynthia and Rose, they were, I had never seen anybody do what they did, you know. They were my light. When I first saw two women up on stage actually being a part of the band, playing instruments and singing and, you know, being a part of the fabric of the music, that's when I knew what I wanted to do. So
yeah, we didn't have girls, the girls automatically be in the back, you know, because
right.
there was discrimination within the band, within the music structures of the day, where unless you was a woman that had your own band, if it was a band, the girls, most of the time, they would be background singers out in the back, and if she did play an instrument, they would put the horns back. So I had the whole front line, all seven people up front, except for the drummer, of course.
And that was so awesome. And that was the first time I had ever seen that, you know, besides Motown and girl groups. It was different when the, you know, girl groups were out front. But here was a band, and here were these women that were actually playing music and were, like you said, on the front line with the rest of the fellas. So now, what kind of reaction did they get? Did they get a negative reaction? Because it was pretty much a male-dominated, you know.
Never had any negative reaction. The only negative reaction we really had was the first time we played at the Apollo Theater. And we used to come out one at a time, you know. And,
right,
and,
right.
And the horns were coming out last. And I came up before Cynthia, and everybody started yelling and booing and screaming. And so I stopped the concert. That hadn't even really started, and he did a lecture about me. He said, "Well, said if you don't have to be any color to be entertained, you just have to be able to play." Excuse me, I have to yell at my wife.
8 more minutes.
My wife is yelling for me to come in. I'm outside in my car because I got a really nice setup with my phone in the car and coming through the speakers and stuff. And in my house,
oh, okay.
I got a little 3-year-old granddaughter that's running around screaming. So I came outside in the car.
Okay, is it time to eat dinner?
Oh, no. No, it's my wife has her own office in the house. And when I'm off the road, I watch the grandbaby, and she's in the office working. So.
Oh, isn't that sweet? That's sweet.
Normal. Yeah, we got to help out. It's not. All the macho days are over with me, man. You help out. You know, my wife makes a lot of money, and she works hard, and I do what I can, too, you know.
I heard that, so you guys are a team. Okay, so Sly and the Family Stone was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which was way overdue. Yay. I know that was a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it was.
I know that made it feel all worthwhile.
Yes, it did.
Okay.
January 12th, 1993.
I heard that. So now, tell me about what you're doing now. Tell me about what does it feel like to continue to carry on this legacy, and how do the people receive you? Because you're going all over the place. You're touring all over the place. You're still going to across overseas and all over the United States. So
yeah, Australia too.
So how does it compare now to when you were with Sly? I mean, as far as the energy from the audience goes.
Nothing will ever compare with the initial impact that we had when we were at our biggest, when. After Woodstock, and it was about 3 years' time where, even back in those days, there was a little bit of problem with being late and showing up, so it was a good and bad then, but when it was hot, it was really hot.
Right.
And it was amazing. Then I ran away, as you know, to Hawaii for about 20 years, and when I came back, I put this together here, you know, and what I like about it is, like, we just played at Glastonbury in England. Rolling Stones were right about an acre away at the same concert. And we had about 50 or 60,000 at ours. And the reaction when we do dance and music, and we do basically the same set. We don't change anything. A lot of the Family Stone bands that are around, and even some of the ones I played with in recent years, with someone mentioned, they always, everybody wanted to change it. They want to make it their own thing. It's a what ain't your own thing. It's a Sly's thing. And let's honor him by keeping the torch going for the music, the wonderful music that he wrote. Whether Sly can live up to it or not, 40 years later, it's immaterial. It's about what Sly did. And if people can't dig that, or they want to judge him right now for what he's doing or what he ain't doing, I think that they really ought to just wake up and take a look at themselves, because Sly gave the music world more than almost any one person I can think of in my life.
And we're
out there doing him proud right now.
And I agree with you. I agree with you totally. And you are doing him proud. I haven't seen you live yet, but you're all over the all over YouTube, so you are. Can you give us the names of the members that are playing with you right now?
Absolutely. Well, Gregory Rico, Cynthia Robinson, and myself as the founding members. My band leader, Blaise Sasson, who I met, he was born and raised in Hawaii, and I met him over there, and we had a little Sly tribute band over there in Hawaii when I was off for 20 years. I ran away to Hawaii for 20 years. And So he is my musical director, and he's just wonderful. He knows, he does direct, he can do all stuff that Larry does, you know. Well, not all. Nobody can do Larry like Larry. But he learned all of the jam and all that stuff, but we don't do that on our show. We do songs like the record.
And right.
That's what I love about the band. Alex Davis, he's my lead singer, my fly guy, or I call him my sly clone. He lays it as good as possible. And if you're not Patrice Banks, or and many people like you that really, really know Sly's voice, then people say, man, that sounds just like Sly. And in many ways he does. And a lot of his actions, the way he moves, his smile. Freddie told me, Freddie kind of, because the hair stood up my arm. He goes, that looks like my brother.
It does look like him now, for sure.
So, you know, in the voice part, he does, you got to be at the show to see how much he does sound like Sly in a lot of songs. The little YouTube things he sings, I ain't never heard or saw a YouTube on our band that did the band justice. That's just the way it goes. Sometimes the filming, you got to have your own film crew there. All the stuff you see on YouTube is by somebody taken with a little $200 camera, you know what I mean, or an iPhone. There's not any really good film on us because we're not making $100,000. We make good money, and we make a heck of a lot more than we can make as local musicians or in a tribute band. But we're still growing.
I heard that. And you have a young lady, right? What's her name?
Yeah, well, Trina Johnson's with us right now. But we have three girls that do the parts. And, like right now, Trina, who has her own show in Vegas, and she toured all over the world she's an impersonator. She does Whitney Houston, she does this person, that person, and she does Rose's parts. But she don't sound like Rose. I love her, and she's a really good friend. She's in China right now, so she's on the road in China. So we're going to be using Blaze's cousin. And I can tell you more about her later. And she is great. She is beautiful. Blaze is a funky Filipino boy, and he's like my son. Just like my wife is Filipino. And people from the Philippines are really fine musicians. They love and sing really good. And so Blaze is a cousin. She is African-American Filipino, and she lives in Santa Cruz now. Married to a doctor, she knows every Sly song. And she is gorgeous. Another girl named Crystal Robinson. They're no relation to Cynthia, but lives in Vegas, and she's got a killer voice, and she's beautiful. You can't duplicate Rose Stone. I love Rose with all my heart. And Rose has been on the road for a while now with Elton John, doing great, and I wish her well, you know. The people that I have doing the parts are doing their parts. And Nate Winfield is my guitar player. He studied Freddie. He's from Philadelphia. He played with everybody from Stevie Wonder a list as long as my arm. He's a funny band. Freddie just loved him. And so everybody knows what to do.
And that's all that matters. That's all that matters. Uh-huh. And you are keeping the funk alive, and thank you so much for keeping the legacy alive. And I want y'all to roll until the wheels fall off. And I want to thank you so much, Jerry. I can't tell you how honored I am to have you on the show tonight. And you got any shout-outs? You want to say hello to anybody right quick?
I just want to say hello to all my friends out there and all the Sly & Simon Stone fans. The Family Stone is keeping the torch going to the wonderful music. And we have a really nice group of people that are friends of us, mostly in the East Coast, but actually all over. So hello, everybody. I love you. I love you, Patrice.
And
I
love
you,
too.
You was a baby girl. I remember you was a baby girl, about 17. And you just was, you were too pretty for my own good.
I love you too,
I love you,
Jerry.
Baby.
And on our way, Okay, and we're going to play Thank You on our way out, and I just want to say for all things chocolate, go to PatriceChocolateBanks.com. Thank you to my family. Thank you to my Facebook family, to Beverly, the Funkalutionaries, and happy birthday, Libras. And until next week, God bless all of you, and may the funk be with all of you. And we're going to go out funking with Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again. Thank you.